You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Take note. I know that's officially the Utah Jazz slogan on Twitter, but at least for one night, I think it's unofficially the Houston Rockets slogan for the entire NBA. So with that, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, the only home for daily podcast commentary on the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. What a Friday night it was for the Rockets in Salt Lake City. A pivotal Game 3 going in. The series tied at 1. The Jazz actually had home court after taking Game 2 in Houston on Wednesday. And the Rockets won the game going away. Seemed almost over within the first few minutes. The Rockets winning the first quarter by 17, being up 30 at the half. Lead grew to as much as 38 in the third quarter. Jazz made a little bit of headway in garbage time, but ultimately this was the Rockets game from the outset. Just a fabulous game from the standpoint of not just individuals, but I would say team commitment. Offensively, 70 points in the first half, just 40 points allowed. Defensively, adjustments for Mike D'Antoni. We'll discuss that throughout the program. They had a clear emphasis on more mid-range shots. You also saw more of the three-guard lineup with Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, James Harden. So we'll talk about the adjustments, what it means, the individual standouts, so many storylines throughout our normal three-points recap. But I want to lead by discussing the broader context of what it means going forward. Because the Rockets winning this game to go up 2-1, coupled with a Warriors loss on the same night to New Orleans, a blowout loss, lost by 19 points in the game in which Steph Curry had 18 points on 19 shots and clearly did not look quite himself coming off the MCL, the grade 2 injury that he suffered with over the past 6 weeks or so. It's amazing what one night can do, because all of a sudden the Rockets, they're back on serve in their series, up 2-1. They have retaken home court. Even if they lose game 4 Sunday, they still have home court. But ultimately, if they win that game 4 Sunday to go up 3-1, they pretty much put a hammer lock on this series. Realistically, the Rockets, it's amazing what this win does psychologically, not just to win, but win with the style points they did, because it's almost like Game 4 in Minnesota, in that not only do you get the one game, which of course is most important, but in addition to that, you gain so much confidence for being able to go into a raucous environment. And those fans in Utah, let's give them credit. They made a run in the second quarter. The Rockets built the lead to 24 points early in the second. The Jazz cut it to 15. And you would have thought they had tied it up with how crazy that gym was going. Utah, it's a very good team, but it's not a market that's had a ton of playoff success over the past decade or so. So clearly, in a second round series, it's a big deal to them. And especially after winning game 2, they had a lot of confidence. But the Rockets, just as we saw in game 4 at Minnesota, when faced with adversity, that's when they come out with their best stuff. And so when the Jazz cut that lead to 15, the Rockets pushed it back up to 30 by the half. Such an incredible response. And really, all season long, the Rockets have been at their best when facing adversity. And that resilience is what separates them even from a year ago. And maybe it's the presence of all the veterans they acquired, Chris Paul, PJ Tucker, Luke Bamute, maybe some of it's drawing lessons from what happened against the Spurs a year ago in the playoffs. But regardless, the resilience of this Rockets team, you can certainly poke holes in their effort at times when not challenged. After the Game 2 loss the other night, I made a point, my lead point in my post-game recap was about they've had entirely too many slow starts. Seemingly when their backs aren't against the wall, you kind of take the foot off the gas a little bit. And that's a fair critique. At some point to win a title, I do think you need to figure that out and get better. But more important than that is how you respond when faced with adversity, because ultimately that's what's going to define you, be it this round or especially when you play the likes of the Golden State Warriors, which is still the likely scenario moving forward. And the Rockets, just as they did after losing game 3 of the first round, losing game 2 and then going back to Utah, they face more questions than ever. The Jazz, on paper, a better team than Minnesota, also having home court, first time that the Rockets could say, really, this entire season, that they did not control their own destiny as far as just win your home games and you win a ring. Now, I know that's a little simplistic, but until tonight, or until game two, I should say, the Rockets could have said that. Now they had to go in and at some point take at least one game in Utah. And by the way they did it, yes, it's just one game, but the confidence you gain from winning a game like this one in that environment when the Jazz were that focused, that excited going in, even if you need to win a game six. Because let's be real, the adjustments that the Jazz made before game two, they're a very good team. Be it game four or game five, they are perfectly capable of beating you in a game. Another game this series. Now, I don't expect that to happen, but it's certainly possible. But the Rockets, just as I said after game four in Minnesota, when you win a game like that, especially in a raucous playoff environment, it's not just the one individual game. It's the confidence it gives you that even if you get in a tight spot later on, you can still bounce back. And I think we saw it for the Rockets in the first round, but it's fair to critique and say, okay, that's Minnesota. It's a bad defense. What's going to happen against a different opponent? Maybe a different style because Utah, it's a slower pace. They're much better defensively. What's going to happen when it's a very different type of play? Well, the Rockets responded, if anything, better. Because game four in Minnesota, yeah, they had the 71-30 run in the middle of the game. They're actually down by as much as 7 points getting to the midway point of the second quarter. This one, Joe Ingles hit a three to open the game, and then the Rockets went on a 19-2 run right after that. Again, up 17 after the first quarter, up 30 after the first half, up as much as 38 in the third quarter. Just a remarkable game from start almost to finish. Of course, things got a little bit hairy. I don't think there's really any such thing as 48 minutes of domination, especially against a Jazz team that even down 38 points keeps pushing. You give Quinn Snyder a lot of credit for the culture he has instilled. But for the Rockets, yes, it's a big win to take back command of the series, 2-1. But bigger picture, I think it's one that pays dividends for later in this series if you need it, and potentially for later rounds as well. Because I think part of the poise the Rockets showed tonight, it went back to game four in Minnesota. I think they drew on that experience that, hey, they lost game three against the Timberwolves actually by a bigger margin than they did game two of this series. Timberwolves beat them by 16 points. And so there was a lot of adversity. And the Rockets, even in game four against Minnesota, started off slowly. And they just calmly went about their business. And then this one tonight, it's not even like Chris Paul and James Harden were particularly good shooting the basketball. The Rockets won the game with defense, team play, ball movement, adjustments, just so many things up and down the roster. And what, if anything, you would say about Chris Paul and James Harden, what they lacked in terms of shooting execution, they offset and then some in terms of their leadership, their defense, their contributions up and down the roster, cheering their teammates on, setting them up for great looks. And because of that, the Rockets just cruised to a win in Salt Lake City. And more importantly, just as they're up 2-1, the Golden State lead shrinks to 2-1. So the last two nights, I've done shows discussing why the Rockets losing that game two and being 1-1 is particularly deflating in the context of the Warriors being up 2-0. Well, what a difference one game can make. The game three and both of those seemingly going the Rockets' way. Now they're back on serve with the Warriors both up 2-1. And if anything, I would say the Warriors have more to worry about than the Rockets do. Because the Rockets lost to Utah. Certainly it was closer than Golden State's loss, which was by 19 points. They trailed by as much as 25 in the fourth quarter. But the Rockets, their game against Utah, folks, a lot of it came from just the 19-point deficit they dug in the first half. By and large, final 30 minutes of the game, the Rockets were the better team. They flipped a 19-point deficit, I should say, to a 5-point lead. They were up in the fourth quarter and they actually got a ton of good looks. And I think ultimately, even though they missed those looks, because I think there's some fatigue from having to overcome that early deficit, it kind of laid the groundwork for what happened in game three, in which the Rockets, they saw the success they had in game two with Eric Gordon, Chris Paul, James Harden, that three-guard lineup all playing at once. They could have success with that. A lot of teams, including the Warriors, you may not be able to do that against via the Rockets because you need more versatility defensively. The Jazz don't really have that much depth in terms of really long wing perimeter playmaker types. So the Rockets can play those three guards. They got better looks tonight, and they made them. And ultimately, it was a game that the Rockets, despite all the things they did poorly defensively, they said that at practice Thursday, that they just could not believe how poorly they played defensively. They were in the film room. They wanted to correct it. They certainly did that, again, limiting the Jazz just 40 points in the first half. But the Rockets in game two played about as poorly as they possibly could, and they were up 5 with about 14 minutes to go. They were winning with 9 minutes to go, and they were within 5 points, or maybe it was 6 points, I can't remember exactly, with about 3 minutes to go. The Warriors, they weren't even close. And Stephen Curry, we've always said his return from an MCL injury, it's not what he looks like in game one. It's how he responds after playing on it from game to game. You could see he was not able to create separation as well as he normally does. Now, it's just one game. It's just one data point. Just as game two, when he was really good, was one data point. But the bottom line is, the Rockets and Warriors, they're both back on equal footing, both up 2-1 in the second round. And if anything, I would say there are more questions about the Warriors, given the way they were dominated in game three and given the lingering health issues with arguably their best player in Stephen Curry. So it's incredible to say this just 48 hours after there's a lot of pessimism after game two. But folks, that's the playoffs. That's what happens. Things can change for better or for worse very, very quickly. It's amazing what one game can do. And in this beatdown for the Rockets in game three, coupled with a big loss on the road by the Warriors to the Pelicans, things suddenly appear much, much rosier for the Rockets than they did even just 24 hours ago. Now, I wanted to lead discussing the bigger picture things, because for the Rockets, this season has always been about more than even the second round of the playoffs. It's always been about the Rockets competing for a championship, which in today's NBA means your comparisons with the Warriors. So to be able to get a statement win like that, that builds your confidence, even if you're in a sticky spot, to get a win on the same night the Warriors lose and be back on even footing 2-1 in the second round, meaning they're not poised to have any sort of substantial advantage in terms of rest, injury status going into what we all still see as a likely scenario for the Western Conference Finals. Although New Orleans winning that big, all of a sudden that ABC game Sunday afternoon, it wouldn't be shocking at all if they're able to tie it at 2, and from there, who knows. But to me, that's the bigger story. It's no disrespect to the Utah Jazz. It's a quality organization. They've had a heck of a season. But ultimately, if the Rockets lose this second round series, it's because of something they did catastrophically wrong. The Jazz this year, just like most of the NBA, except for probably the Warriors, is not in the Rockets' class. And that's no disrespect to them at all. Quinn Snyder's doing amazing work over there. But ultimately, the Rockets, when they play the way they did in Friday night's big win in Game 3, they're just in a different league. And I spent the initial segment discussing the bigger picture implications. Now we can move into some of the individual analysis. And what stands out about this game, Chris Paul and James Harden shot a combined 14 of 34 from the field and 3 of 15, just 20% from 3. Now, they did have 40 points, 18 assists, and just one turnover. So incredible efficiency, 18 assists to one turnover. They valued possessions. That was a big part of how the Rockets took command in this game. They never really gave the Jazz a chance to make an extended run because they valued possessions enough. Nene had 4 turnovers off the bench, but other than that, Rockets did not have very many at all on the game. And so you credit the Rockets for taking the game seriously, but the biggest takeaway for me is that Chris Paul and James Harden were somewhat pedestrian by their standards. Now, again, they were great floor generals, 12 assists for Harden, 6 for Paul. They also rebounded well. Chris had 7 boards, James had 11, so combine them. Yeah, 40 points, 18 assists, 11 rebounds, just one turnover. They were great. They also played good defense. Really, the whole team did when you limit the Jazz the way they did in Game 3. And yet, the Rockets won going away, and it feels like that Chris Paul and James Harden probably had maybe a B or B-plus game for the two of them, between the two of them, because we know both of them can be more explosive even than what we saw in Game 3. We've seen it at times in this series. Look what James Harden did the first two games. And ultimately, it's because the Rockets got a lot more help from the supporting cast. Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker mentioned that they were just 2 of 9 from behind the arc in game two. PJ, especially late in the fourth quarter, missed a lot of open shots that were big. In this one, those two guys were combined 8 of 14 from the field, made 3 of their 8 threes, which is nearly 40%. Trevor actually was a team best plus 40 in his 28 minutes, just astounding, which of course speaks not just the fact that he's making shots at a 50% clip, 40% from three, but also the contributions he's bringing you defensively. PJ only made 1 3, actually had a couple of teardrops, or I shouldn't say teardrops, his more hooks, because he was set, but he was able to finish at the rim even over Rudy Gobert. By the way, speaking of the Jazz bigs, Derek Favors left early with a sprained ankle. We'll have to see what his status is moving forward, even though I think in this matchup, favors isn't quite as valuable as he is normally because it's so tough to play too big against the Rockets. He is another big body, and it makes them especially dependent on Gobert. And if the Rockets get in any foul, if Favors isn't able to go and they're able to get Gobert in any foul trouble at all, then it makes the Jazz especially thin, even for a team as thick and interior-minded as Utah is. It can potentially have an impact, even if it's not as important in this particular matchup. But PJ, I thought, finished inside. Those two guys bounce back. Clint Capella, 11, 8, 4 assists. Capella's ball movement has gotten better in the playoffs, but 4 blocks. His rim protection was enormous. It seemed like every time the Jazz seemed poised in transition to go on one of those runs, Capella was able to protect the rim. 4 blocks, just 2 fouls in his 30 minutes. So when you see a guy that's able to get that many blocks at the rim and only foul twice, that tells you that he is really, really disciplined and really, really locked in. It's not like he's just jumping wildly at everything. He's contesting when he has a clear block. He's timing it accurately. And Clint, I've raved throughout the playoffs, and it still holds true. His defense is just incredible. Of course, he's protecting the rim. He's also able to switch on the guards on the perimeter. He's a big part of what the Rockets do. And ultimately, the Rockets did exactly what we all wanted them to do after Game 2, which was defensively lock in, and when they do that, they are the best team in basketball. Even on a night that James Harden and Chris Paul were pretty good but not great, just 20% from 3 combined, it didn't even matter because the Rockets were that damn good defensively. They were that locked in. And, of course, it starts with Ariza and Tucker, your veteran starters at the forward spot. Clint Capella, he's been the rim protector the entire postseason. And when those two guys, when those three, I should say, set the tone, then ultimately you're not going to fall in the 19-point hole that you did early in Game 2. And as long as the Rockets didn't do that, and don't do that moving forward, they should be fine in this series because they just simply have more playmakers. And then I buried the lead a little bit because the real story was the bench. Eric Gordon, 25 points, 8 of 13 shooting, plus 21. In the first half, he had 17 on 6 of 8 from the field. And early in the series, it felt like the Rockets were dependent on just James Harden. And don't get me wrong, Harden was still very good in this game, 25 and 12, 8 of 17 from the field. But early in the second and fourth quarters, late in the first and third of Game 1 and Game 2, those 5 or 6 minutes of each half that James has sat, those have not been good for the Rockets. And throughout the season, those have actually been positive minutes because the unit with Eric Gordon and Chris Paul, that's probably better than most benches around the league. It hasn't been in this series, and a big part of that has been the regression of Eric Gordon. Now, he's shown some signs of life lately, 0 of 6 in Game 1. Game 2, you know, 5 of 16 from the field didn't look good, but he was 3 of 6 from 3, which showed you some positive signs. But keep in mind, Game 4 and Game 5 against Minnesota, he averaged over 18 points a game on above 40% shooting from 3, so he did head into this series with some rhythm. Game 1 was off. Game 2, he did have the positive 3-point numbers. And then tonight, everything paid off. 8 of 13 from the field, 4 of 8 from 3, just a great showing. 5 of 5 from the line, so he was springy. Yeah, he made 50% of his threes. He also made, 4 of 5 inside the arc, got to the line 5 times, made all of those. Just an incredible showing, and as we've said all year, Eric Gordon is the Rockets' variable. If he gets to the Klay Thompson level, which he has been at times in terms of that third, fourth wheel, the Rockets are as close to unstoppable as it gets. Because if you have Eric Gordon in that role, then all of a sudden, even relative to the Warriors, the combined depth that the Rockets have, and by the way, Luke Bamute, they wanted to see him boost the minutes into the 20s. He did. He was able to play 22 minutes tonight. They committed more to Eric Gordon. The Rockets kind of had to pick a lane. Ryan Anderson did not play until garbage time. Seemed clear that moving him out of the rotation entirely was the play. I think they were curious what they would get from Nene. Other than the turnovers, I actually thought Nene was pretty good tonight. 8 and 4 in his 14 minutes, made all of his shots. He seemed to be very engaged around the rim. They played Gerald Green 17 minutes. It seems Mike D'Antoni is saying that if Ryan is not playing at the 5, he is just not athletic enough to play in this matchup. And I think they're trying to give minutes to Nene. And other than a couple of lazy turnovers, I thought he generally earned them. But the Rockets bench tonight, it wasn't just the starters and Eric Gordon. Up and down the roster, you had contributions. That's what the Rockets have been missing. Not just Eric Gordon being a volume scorer, but being an efficient scorer, a legitimate Klay Thompson-level third or fourth star. That's what we saw Game 4 and Game 5 against Minnesota that had everyone so optimistic heading into the series. We finally saw it again. And when you unlock that version of Eric Gordon tied for the lead in scoring with 25, that's when the Rockets are, in my opinion, the clear best team in the NBA, even relative to the Warriors. I think the Rockets just have more depth, and they even have a little more rim protection in the form of Clint Capela, who I think is better than most options that the Warriors have at the five. Now, of course, we know the Warriors will run their death lineups with Draymond in the middle, which they've had a lot of success with in recent years. But ultimately, I think the Rockets are better prepared than ever to counter those, because I think Clint is able to play on the perimeter in a way that he has not been in years past. And so combine that with his ability to get rebounds over, I think, anyone the Warriors could throw in that lineup. And I think the Rockets are better prepared to play against that lineup, as great as it is, than they have been in years past. But this game tonight, yeah, it was about the starters and then the bench contributing the way they did. Just a remarkable showing. Because Eric Gordon, with that level of upside, and he's been criticized a lot. 0 of 6 in game 1, he's been the variable. So if you're going to criticize him when things go poorly, you have to give him his due when it goes well. And when the Rockets really took control of this game, the 113-92 victory, it was in those minutes late in the first quarter, early in the second quarter, when it went from, oh, that's a nice run by the Rockets, they're up 15, to holy crap, they're up like 24, 25, to where it got out of hand and where there were no what I would call high-stress minutes from halftime onward. And that was so big in that, you know, we mentioned Luke playing 22 minutes. He got there by playing some in the fourth quarter. Nene got to 14. Gerald Green got to 17. Now, Gerald was a minus 15, so it's fair to question Gerald's defensive contributions. I think the Rockets are very aware of those. But the point is, when you get off to the poor starts they did in game 2, you can't even really evaluate your options because you're constantly playing high-stress minutes where you're just trying to kind of struggle to keep your head above water. By the Rockets starting the game so well defensively, and we'll talk about the adjustments Mike D'Antoni made because I thought they were brilliant on both sides of the ball in the third segment. But ultimately, some of it just comes down to better execution, playing harder. The veterans set the tone. Ariza, Tucker in the starting lineup. Capela did what he does in terms of protecting the rim. And then the bench, Bamute, Nene, and certainly Eric Gordon, all much better in game 3 than game 2. And ultimately, that's why the Rockets will come out with a 113-92 win, even without Chris Paul and James Harden, 40 points, 18 assists, 11 rebounds combined, just one turnover, being especially great by their own lofty standards. For the third and final segment, I'm going to turn our attention to Mike D'Antoni, because it's easy to credit the players. They're who you see in the box score, and they're making the plays on the floor, but as much as they tried harder, as much as they made brilliant decisions, they were also put in a position to succeed by some very tactical adjustments, in my opinion, by Mike D'Antoni. We finished the final part of our second segment discussing the role of Eric Gordon, of course, his long-term upside for the Rockets. When you're comparing the Rockets to a lot of teams in the Western Conference, including the Warriors, it's tough for them to play Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon for that many minutes together, because playing all three guards are a little small, and if the other team has lots of length and playmaking potential at the wings, or even just rebounders, they may be able to expose you. The Jazz don't really have that. The Jazz, I know Joe Ingles had 27 points in game 2, but it was largely off of the Rockets inexplicably leaving him on rotations. To the Rockets' credit, they adjusted well in game 3. They did not leave very often. The Ingles had just 6 points, 2 of 10 shooting, and 3 of them came in the first 30 seconds of the game. So after the first 30 seconds, he had just 3 points on 1 of 9. So the Rockets, that was one clear adjustment. And of course, it was Captain Obvious, don't leave Joe Ingles, the best shooter on the team. But they did that successfully in terms of limiting his looks. But in terms of creators, to get back to the point, the Jazz really are dependent on Donovan Mitchell. And of course, the Rockets did a good job on him yet again, 6 of 21 in game 2. Tonight, just 4 of 16 for 10 points. We know what the Rockets can do. Ariza, P.J. Tucker, Luke Bamute, even Clint Capela on occasion switching. The Rockets can be very dynamic individually. The key for the Rockets is to limit the ball movement. Mitchell had 11 assists in game 2 to just 3 in game 3. So the Rockets certainly did that. But to get back to Eric Gordon, where the Rockets fall short a lot of matchups, such as against the Warriors, you can't really play those three guards because of the defensive limitations. Against a team like Utah, that's not really the case. There's not really that many, at least consistent. I mean, there are guys with length, the guys like Burks, Crowder, Exum, but I think you can live with those guys if they're going to make plays off the dribble to beat you. And to their credit, some of them did in game two. But you can live with that. And what I think the Rockets and Mike D'Antoni saw in the fourth quarter of game two, even though the shots didn't go in, as I said in the postgame, the Rockets got some incredible shots down the stretch of game two. They very easily could have come back in the final minutes and won that game with as many wide open threes as they got. And it was with Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, and James Harden all out there together. And it just so happened they didn't go in. But the Rockets trusted process over result. I think they saw that against Utah, they could play those three together. We saw that more in this game, and especially late in the second quarter when the Rockets blew it up. Jazz cut it at one point in the second quarter to 15, and the Rockets pushed it up to 30 at the half to make the lead insurmountable. That was largely with Chris, James, and Eric all on the floor at the same time. And to me, that was Mike D'Antoni seeing process over result and seeing that in this particular setting, I don't know if it can against the Warriors, but in this particular setting, that three-guard lineup for extended periods, it could work. And boy, did it tonight. In terms of other adjustments we mentioned, defensively, the Rockets were awfully over-aggressive, I thought, on Donovan Mitchell in Game 2. Game 1, it wasn't like he was especially great. In Game 2, they were so overly aggressive, trapping on the perimeter, and that's what led to the ball movement. The Rockets, in Game 3, they defended well, but they did not, I would say, overly trap as much. That was a big part of how they had just, how Mitchell had just 3 assists compared to 11. And another key thing the Rockets did, especially early in the game, the Rockets were so good offensively in the mid-range. In the first quarter, which is when they clearly established control of this game, going up 17, they had 12 of their 39 points from mid-range and 6 mid-range pull-ups or floaters. And of course, Chris Paul had a lot of those. I mentioned Chris Paul tonight had, 15 points, and he only had 1 3. Had 5 shots that were not threes. And I don't believe he had any layups at all. All were mid-range. They clearly gave him more authority to take that shot. Harden's floater was working. Harden was just 2 of 8 from 3. But inside the arc, he was 6 of 9. Very nice. So Mike D'Antoni, I know it's against his nature to be a heavy on the mid-range guy, but in this series, especially with the way the Jazz hugged the shooters, and it's not like the Rockets, we discussed in the preview the importance of the Rockets getting more threes. That didn't really happen. The Rockets, 36 out of 86, it's a higher proportion than game two when I think they were 37 out of 95. It's still not the 50% that they want to be at. But ultimately, the Rockets succeeded anyway because they were able to succeed in the mid-range game. It wasn't just threes and layups. They weren't trying to force a square peg in a round hole. They were comfortable making plays off the dribble. Eric Gordon, that was a big part. I mentioned in game two, he was 5 of 16 despite being 3 of 6 from behind the arc, which tells you he was just 2 of 10 from inside. Well, this one, he was 4 of 5. James Harden mentioned he was 6 of 9. Chris Paul had 5 makes, none were layups. So all three of those guys, they looked a lot more comfortable, a lot more willing. In game two, you even had a couple of 24-second violations. The Rockets just looked tentative. This one, there was very little tentative. The Rockets, when they got their shot, they took it. And ultimately, that's what's incredible about this game. It's not like the Rockets just had a game where they made 23s or James Harden had 50 points. Chris Paul, James Harden, I'd say they had collectively probably a B-plus game. The Rockets, they didn't get off 50% of their shots from three. They made just 11 of 36, barely above 30%. So by the traditional metrics, it was an okay game, but nothing to write home about. And yet, the Rockets won this game in dominating fashion because they showed you an ability to win in so many different ways. They took care of the ball, just 8 turnovers, only 4 by the Stars. Actually, 7 of the 8 turnovers were from Clint Capela and Nene. In terms of your playmakers, only 1 turnover combined. They took care of the basketball. They played defense. They forced 16 turnovers from the Jazz. They limited them to 40 points in the first half. It's amazing to see that the Rockets, even without typical D'Antoni, Morey ball, the spreadsheet, the threes, all the things they're made fun of, they really didn't excel at any of those tonight. It wasn't like they were terrible. And yet they won going away. Mid-range, defense, key shots in key moments, never letting up. The Rockets won in a very different way than you would expect them to based on their reputation. A year ago, I don't think that happens. Now it does, and certainly you credit the new guys. I think Chris Paul's leadership means a lot. PJ Tucker, Luke Bamute, those veterans, they're certainly a big part of it as well. But also give credit to guys who I think have learned from their prior experience. James Harden, Mike D'Antoni, the things that went wrong a year ago, in my opinion, you have seen them learn from it. I think you're seeing James much more engaged defensively, even when things go wrong for him in these playoffs. Mike D'Antoni, you're seeing a willingness to adapt if plan A from his preferred style of ball is not working out. Even the guys that were there last year and pigeonholed by a lot of NBA media, they're showing you a willingness to change. And because of that, the Rockets, again, with the 113-92 win, they're up 2-1 in this series. They still have not lost back-to-back games all season long with Chris Paul and James Harden playing, and they have an opportunity to essentially go for a kill shot in Sunday night's Game 4. We put them up 3-1 going back to Houston for Game 5. And while it's going to be a test, we've seen, you know, as I mentioned leading off, the big thing is how do you handle adversity? The Rockets do that great. Well, now it's going to be how do they handle success. That's when they come out a little flat. And so I think it's another challenge for the Rockets. We'll see how they handle it. But ultimately, regardless what happens Sunday, I think it's another kind of feather in the Rockets' cap, another notch in their belt to where they are gaining more and more confidence, not just for this round, but later rounds in the playoffs, that when they're in a tough spot, they've got an A game that they can pull out. And even if it's in the past, say, yeah, the Rockets have an A game, but it's kind of dependent on hitting threes and what happens if you just run into a night where you're not making those, because to anybody, that's going to happen. There's going to be some volatility. Well, even without the threes, the Rockets, with their defense, their ball movement, their IQ, even without threes, they are able to still dominate a game, as we saw tonight. And that's going to pay dividends, not just in Game 4, but in my opinion, games later in this series and in later rounds, assuming the Rockets are able to advance as well. So with that, I will wrap up this late night episode of Locked On Rockets, because I'm ready to get kind of my weekend on, get a little bit of a break, and then get back to things late Sunday night with the Rockets, again, having Game 4 in Salt Lake City, and slightly earlier tip at 7 p.m. Houston time on Sunday evening. So until then, I will sign off. As always, I am Ben Dubose, your host here at Locked On Rockets. I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in. If you want more from me, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. I've also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, and a website at lockedonrockets.com, all places you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, inquire about becoming a potential advertiser, because with the Rockets playing this well, we certainly have a large and growing audience. So anything we can do for you, the diehard Rockets fan, businessman, whatever it may be, please don't hesitate to reach out. Once again, the very happy final from, Oklahoma City, from Salt Lake City, Rockets 113, Jazz 92, Rockets now up 2-1 in the best of seven series. Game 4 looms on Sunday night. Also, final plug, of course, Locked On Podcast Network got a lot of shows across the NBA, NFL, even some MLB. That includes the Utah Jazz. They got a great program hosted by David Locke, the radio play-by-play voice. So if you want to hear the Jazz perspective on what went wrong for them tonight, I'm sure there'll also be a lot of talk about what the Rockets did right, then certainly tune in to David's show at Locked On Jazz. You can find him iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, same places you listen to and hopefully subscribe to Locked On Rockets. He's also got a website, lockedonjazz.net. So if you want to hear their side of it, he's going to have some great stuff. If not later tonight, I would assume certainly very early Saturday morning that you can hear their side as well. Anyway, until Sunday night's Game 4, I will sign off. Once again, 113-92 the final. Rockets winners from Utah, and Game 4 looming just a little over 40 hours or so away. For now, folks, have a good weekend, and thanks again for listening to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team.